It was a wonderful, wonderful gathering. Our first version of Midweek Cafe was fantastic. It was exciting to see all the different foods that people brought, because at Midweek Cafe, we bring our own food, and it's amazing. About 70% of the people had Chick-fil-A. It was pretty cool. So they had chicken, so Chick-fil-A was the big winner. But there were all sorts of things that were there for dinner, so we had a great time. A good group from the Handbell folks coming early to folks staying with us all the way up until 6:30 eating. Then we had a good group for our Bible study, which we're focusing on our DNA as a church and the DNA of the Baptist churches in general. And we're talking about the four fragile freedoms of what it means to be Baptist. And we had a great conversation about Bible freedom this past week, and we're going to be talking about soul freedom this Wednesday coming up. A great conversation. And then I went up to see the youth and the children, and we had more youth than we've had any time since before the pandemic. It was a great group and a great gathering, and a great gathering of children learning mission and doing music. It was a really great evening. So if you have not had the chance to be with us on Wednesday night, last week was the first Wednesday of the fall semester. This is a perfect time to keep going. We start Midweek Cafe, opens at 5:30 on Wednesdays. We would love to see you there. There's something for every age group, and I hope you will join us coming up this time. Also, make a note to yourself. You've probably already done this because we mentioned it last Sunday. October the 3rd, we are going to have a special combined service with all three of our worship services, the 8:30 service, the 10:30 service, and the 12:30 service. And that combined service is going to be at 11 o'clock. Now, I know that's going to be a little bit of a switch for all of us in this room at this time, but we're trying to meet in the middle at a time when everybody can be together. So 11 o'clock, Sunday, October the 3rd, and we are going to celebrate the 15th anniversary of our Hispanic congregation together. It's going to be a wonderful worship gathering. We're going to join together. And then afterwards, our plan as it currently stands, we've ordered great fall-like weather for that day with a beautiful sunny sky. And our plan is to have a wonderful meal together outside afterwards. So we'll see. Hopefully the weather's going to hold up for that, but it's going to be an exciting day. But that service is going to be at 11 o'clock on October 3rd, so I want you all to be aware and all to be ready so that we make sure that everybody, in addition to reading the newsletter and seeing this information everywhere else, you hear it here as well. So we've got some very exciting things coming up, including the continuation of our Wednesday nights. It's a great time to be a part of the renewal and the rebuilding that is First Baptist Church Newport News in these days. So speaking of renewal and rebuilding, we're coming into the next sermon of our PPP series. PPP, if you remember, stands for pruning, planting, and persevering. The things that so many churches and so many other organizations are having to do during this season as we wrestle with the fact that many of us in so many different places and so many different situations and scenarios are smaller in attendance than we once were. And we're looking forward at how God is reshaping us, how God has pruned us, and how God is going to grow new fruit in the midst of that pruning. So today we're going to be looking at Nehemiah 4. You may want to put a finger in that as we start. But I want to go back to when I was a teenager to begin this sermon. About 10 years ago when I was a teenager. I want to go back to that time. And one of the things I loved when I was a teenager was youth camp. I loved church youth camp. And our youth camps, most of the time we went to something called Centrifuge, which some of you may remember or may have heard of, may have even been to. And I remember we always went to particular college campuses. And one day at Centrifuge camp, I went into a bookstore at a college campus and I was looking around for things just because I had some money that was burning a hole in my pocket. And I was looking around, and I came upon some motivational posters. You know those? Came across some of those, and one of them, I was flipping through. I looked at it, and it just stuck with me. It's this picture of this runner, and I wasn't really a runner at the time. I didn't know I would be later in life, but this runner running along a two-lane road in this beautiful hilly country. It's a little misty, a little rainy, and it was a winding road that was going, it looked like, about straight up. You ever seen roads like that? And the runner was running straight up that road. And there wasn't another soul in sight. There wasn't a house anywhere. He was going to have to make it up that road, or else he was just going to have to stop and, I guess, just sleep or something. He had to make it up that road. And the saying on this poster said, The race is not to the swift, but to those who keep on running. I loved that poster. I bought that poster. It made sense to me. Maybe because of the era of my life, my parents' divorce, whatever it might have been, it made sense emotionally to me. And that poster went home with me. It went on my wall at home. It went on my dorm room wall at college. It went on the wall of every apartment I had in college. It went with me to seminary and went on the wall of every apartment until finally there was one rip too many and it just couldn't take it anymore. And that poster was relegated to the bins of history. But it still sticks with me. And it was years later, I think, maybe during those seminary years when I first realized that that sentiment was actually a very liberal paraphrase of a verse in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 9:11 says this, "I've seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all." Like I said, it was a fairly liberal paraphrase. The point of this text, no success is guaranteed to anyone because of their status, their talent, their brilliance, or anything else. In this life, all of us face the realities of time, of aging, of chance, things happening that we have no control over. And all of us face obstacles of some kind or another. The ones who overcome are not the ones who find a way to live through life without facing any of these things, because the writer of Ecclesiastes, very clear, we all face these things in different amounts, which we can't understand why that happens. That's something that God can explain to us one day. But all of us face these things. We can't eradicate them. So the question is, the ones who overcome are not the ones who avoid obstacles and avoid hardship. The ones who overcome are the ones who just don't quit. And this brings us back to Nehemiah. If you remember from last week, Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem. He takes over the governorship of Jerusalem, and he goes for the purpose of rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem. The people have been beaten down over the years. They're discouraged. They're resigned to lackluster existence. They're resigned to never again being a glorious people of God. Now, we did a lot more history about this last week, so I encourage you to go back and watch those sermons if you haven't already. But basically what we're getting to here is that Nehemiah is called to Jerusalem. And with his calling, he tells them what God has called him here to do. And the people say, you know what? We'll join up. We'll do it. Their hearts begin to beat fast, and they start working on rebuilding the wall. And that, friends, is where the trouble starts. Did you hear that? They start doing the rebuilding. They start doing what God asked them to do, and that's where the trouble starts. Nehemiah 4. Starting with verse 1. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He wasn't only angry, he was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, he said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring these stones back to life from these heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even if a fox climbed up on it, it would break down their wall of stones." So the narrator shifts here, and now it's Nehemiah's voice praying to the Lord. "Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight. For they have thrown insults in the face of the rebuilders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. When you begin a great rebuilding project like the people, like these people of Israel, began rebuilding the wall for their city, When you begin a great rebuilding project in your life, a renewal project, when you begin a great rebuilding project as a church, when we look at where we are as a church and where so many churches in our country are, and we say we need to renew ourselves with the Lord, and we begin to do that, you are going to face obstacles. That's just how life works, friends. Whenever you try to move forward in your life, there will be obstacles that will get in your way, because let me remind you of something. Satan doesn't want you moving forward. Satan doesn't want you moving forward in your life with God. Satan doesn't want our church moving forward or any church moving forward. Satan wants our nation divided, divisive, and polarized, and he wants our churches the same way. So whenever we decide to take a step forward to begin the good work of rebuilding or rebuilding a wall, obstacles are going to show up. Now, the first obstacle that Nehemiah and his crew faced was negativity. You remember Sanballat from last week? He was a leader from an adjacent territory, and he immediately begins ridiculing the efforts of the Jews. And you ever notice how when one person immediately starts ridiculing and starts bringing negativity into a situation, you ever notice how much negativity draws other negative people? So as soon as Sanballat begins his negativity, here comes Tobiah and starts throwing his negativity in the mix. And they are giving all of their ridicule and their negativity all to the people. Isn't it amazing how during hard seasons, some people bond together to follow God forward, while other people bond together to tear people down? Isn't that amazing? And it happens in churches, it happens in nations, it happens in cities, it happens in schools, it happens in your companies, it happens in families. We all have a choice, wherever we are, whether we're going to be people that bond together and move God's mission forward, or if we're going to bond together in negativity about everything we don't like. In pruning seasons, we all have to choose where we're going to focus our energy. God's mission or spreading negativity. Now, we mentioned the Sanballat syndrome last week. The spirit of complaint and negativity and discouragement that Sanballat spews all over the people of Jerusalem, because he doesn't want the situation to change. He doesn't want it to be anything different than the way it is. He likes the status quo, so he and Tobiah, they unload their negativity, hoping that once again the Jewish people will stop their work and settle for the status quo. Because Sanballat and Tobiah, they want things their way. They want reality to function according to their wants and desires, rather than to function according to the greater mission of God. Often, this is the same root of negativity that we find in churches. People deep down don't want to change. They prefer complaint, negativity, and blame to participation in rebuilding. Isn't that how it is at work too sometimes? It's how it is in schools. Because it's so much easier to point fingers than it is to pick up a shovel. It's a lot less tiring too. There's an aphorism that describes this kind of Sanballat negativity in urban day slang. It goes like this. I'm sure you've all used this with one another. Haters gonna hate. Right? Have you ever said that to anybody? No? I'm surprised. Walter, haven't you said this to somebody some before? Haters gonna hate. What that means is that there are people who are gonna see our commitment to God's mission, who see our focus on rebuilding, and they're gonna be negative. They're going to point out a flaw just because it's their spiritual gift to spread discouragement and malcontent. There are people that are just like that. You may have heard, I've told you this story before, I'm going to tell it again because I like it. You've heard about the two guys who always went hunting together. They enjoyed being around them, but one of the guys was negative all the time. If the day was cold, it was too cold. If it was hot, it was too hot. If it was raining, he wanted it sunny. If it was sunny, he wished it would rain. And his friend just got aggravated with him eventually. And they were going dove hunting. And so he had his dog with him, and it's a special dog. So he said, man, I'm going to really show my friend something. He's not going to be able to say anything negative about this. So they shot the doves. Forgive me if this is not how hunting really works. I don't hunt, so I'm doing the best I can. Shot the doves, and the doves fell, and they had to get the dogs to go pick up the doves, right? So one of them fell in the water. And so the man's dog ran toward the water, ran across the water, ducked his head down, grabbed the dove, and walked across the water back and gave it to his master. And the man said, what do you think about that? And his negative friend said, that dog can't swim, can he? There are folks, friends, that can find something wrong with everything. And if you let those folks be the ones that are speaking into your life all the time, or let those folks be the ones speaking into the church, or speaking into your company, or speaking into whatever else, that spirit is going to pervade what happens. It will spread dissension and vindictiveness, because some people just like identifying the scars of pruning more than they do identifying places to grow new fruit. And because many times these folks are good church people, they'll even do it in spiritual language. Negativity is what Nehemiah's folks faced. And we need to understand that when we take on a God-sized rebuilding project in our lives, in our church, in our nation, haters are going to hate. They're going to be there. As we said last Sunday, the pandemic has caused a storm for our churches. We're living through an incredible storm, not just our church, nearly every church. And in this season, we need people that are going to help us build arcs, not people who are storm chasers. We do not need the negativity of Sanballat getting in the way of the renewal God is birthing in us. But negativity, however, isn't the only obstacle that Nehemiah and his crew faced. If you want to read with me Nehemiah 4:10 through 12, you'll see the second obstacle, a very real one that we face as well. Verse 10 says, meanwhile, the people in Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. Also, our enemy said, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them, and we will kill them and put an end to the work. Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they are going to attack us. Second obstacle they faced is exhaustion. They grew tired. The project stalled. People lost their enthusiasm. That's how things work, right? People work really fast and really eager for a little while, but then reality sets in. Man, this is hard. Oh, we've got to come back tomorrow and work? Oh, we've got to lift more bricks? It gets harder and harder, and people get tireder. And the people in Jerusalem, they got tired and discouraged because they hadn't quite seen the results yet that they wanted. Their focus is distracted and drifting. Their strength, physical, mental, and emotional, is giving out. And then they're under the threat of violence. They're under actual threats from Sanballat and Tobiah and their crew, but then they're also, you know how when you think something bad can happen, you know how your imagination starts working overtime, and you imagine things even worse than what people have told you is going to happen? It's amazing how that works. They begin imagining, man, these people that have said they're going to kill us, they're actually the person working next to me. They're actually right over here. Before we know it, everything's just going to go poof right in the midst, and our families are going to be ruined. When we're exhausted, when we're surrounded by negativity, sometimes our minds begin to play tricks on us. Exhaustion is rampant in our culture. It grows as we hear the crescendo of divisive rhetoric and face the daily division around masks and vaccines. Nurses, doctors, hospital staffers are exhausted. The ICUs are filled up with both filled up primarily with unvaccinated patients, and then also breakthrough cases. They're exhausted. Restaurant workers are exhausted. A restaurant that I frequent a lot, I read recently on Facebook about one of the managers there. They normally have 11 employees. They're working with 3 and have been for months, which means she's cooking, washing the dishes, waiting on people, and they're trying to keep their livelihood alive. They're exhausted. Bus drivers are exhausted. Teachers are exhausted. Pastors and pastoral staffs are exhausted. Yes, we've been doing plenty all during this pandemic for the mission of God. Parents are exhausted trying to balance work, learning, and concerns about health for their children who can't be vaccinated yet. Residents of retirement communities and administrators of retirement communities are exhausted. 1 minute people can come in to visit them. The next week, nobody can come visit because there was an outbreak. On and on it goes, back and forth. We are an exhausted culture. And it's hard to keep going and rebuild when you're that exhausted. This is the challenge Nehemiah faced. But they faced another obstacle. They were afraid. And they had good reason to be. They were getting threatened. It wasn't just the negativity. They were getting physically threatened. As they give themselves to rebuilding this wall, they are wondering, can God protect us from these people who are threatening our lives and our families? Would it be easier to quit like we've done so many times before and preserve ourselves? Or is it worth it to persevere and see if God can do something remarkable? We are afraid as well. Our culture is afraid. We are afraid because the pandemic has injected an unwelcome level of uncertainty into our lives that most of us have never faced. We are less certain about the safety of our families, our financial futures, our national future due to the unrelenting polarization that we experience. And yes, we look at the smaller crowds at our church and in many churches, and we grow fearful about the church where we were baptized or where our children and grandchildren were baptized, where we were married, where we buried loved ones. And of course, before the pandemic, churches were already shrinking, especially when you start talking about millennials and Generation Z, and we become afraid for the future of the church. And we wrestle with, how is the church going to go forward in the next 10, 20, and 30 years, especially in such a watershed moment in church history where a new kind of church is needed to reach new kinds of generations, where a church that's more focused on intimacy and small group and connection between people in a more decentralized way out in the community is a way that work is going to have to be done. And that's a big shift. That's a big change. It's not something I was trained for. I was trained for this, like you. It's a big shift for all of us together. Fear leads to paralysis, hiding. Think about the kid who was afraid of the thunderstorm and pulled the covers over his head, right? Fear leads to stagnation and desperation and negativity. Indeed, a lot of times negativity isn't because of mean-spirited people. A lot of times negativity comes out of anxiety and fear. It doesn't come out of bad people. It comes because people get scared. And we sometimes don't know what to do with those emotions. Nehemiah's followers are exhausted. They're surrounded by negativity and they're afraid. What are they going to do? And what can we do since we find ourselves in such similar straits? First thing we can do is we need to eliminate negativity. We need to eliminate that in our words, in our thoughts. We need to eliminate negativity. We need to do all we can when the negativity of others penetrates our souls and our minds to give that negativity to God. That's exactly what Nehemiah did. You go back and read verse 5. You see Nehemiah praying the insults and the negativity of Sanballat and Tobiah. He's praying those back to God and saying, God, vindicate us. God, vindicate us. There's a verse of scripture where it says, your righteousness will shine like the dawn. In other words, we do right. We do what God tells us to do. Let God sort out the negativity. Let's not us be weighted down and pulled down by it. We have to become our own guardians so that our spirits do not become weighted down by a negative spirit. It's a good pattern to pray negativity back to God rather than keeping it and fantasizing with anger fantasies about it or ruminating over it ourselves. Rather than stewing over the insults and critiques of others, in prayer we lay them at the feet of Jesus. And we learn anything we can from those critiques as well, because Jesus helps us see the truth about ourselves. One of the other things you may need to do to eliminate some negativity is you may need to eliminate, there may be some persons in your life. You may love them. They may be people that you care about. They may be in your family. They may be a friend. But they may be like the two guys that went hunting together, who's negative all the time. Friends, the more you're around negativity, the more you become negative. That's simply the way it works. One of the things you may need to do is you may need to set some boundaries. You may just need to say to that good friend, you know what, I enjoy having lunch with you, but I'm not going to sit here and just talk about everything that's wrong. I want to talk about good things God's doing. I want to talk about hope. I want to talk about why I see the Spirit breaking forth. I don't want to spend all of my lunches or phone calls or whatever else choking on blame, on negativity and finger pointing. Because friends, Satan wants us to do that. We may have to step away from people that are fueling us with those kind of emotions. There's too much rebuilding to do. We have to step away from negativity for the sake of our own souls, for the sake of our church family, for the sake of the mission of God. Next thing we need to do is we need to learn to rest with God. Remember, the people were exhausted from rebuilding the wall, and we are exhausted as well. We're in a culture that does not prioritize rest, and we're in a culture where it's hard to rest, because the ongoing emotional barrage is hitting us all the time. So I would refer you back to what we said on August 29th. If you haven't watched that sermon, I would encourage you to watch or listen to that sermon. That's the one where we talked about David. We talked about David and his men arriving back in town to find their homes ransacked. Wives and children had been taken away into captivity, and all of David's men wanting to stone him. And in the midst of this deeply discouraging and distressing situation, David steps away from the crowd, and as 1 Samuel 30:6 says, David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Somehow, in the midst of all of these days, we have to recommit to a time of prayer where we don't simply recite every need that we have, where we don't simply recite everything that we want to tell God, but where we open our spirit to God and say, Lord, minister to my heart because it is broken and there is no way I can keep on running unless you give me the fuel. Lord God, teach me where I need rest. Because, friends, we will not persevere in this season of difficulty. We've never lived through anything like this. None of us. Looking around, I can't find anybody that was alive in 1918 in here, the last pandemic we experienced. So I'm looking. We got a couple of people in our church that are close, but not quite. We've got to find ways where we rest with God. And we've got to make time to do that. We've got to find ways. Focused faith demands persistence to find our strength in the Lord in discouragement and exhaustion. And the final thing we can say today is this. We have to exchange fear for faith. We have to exchange fear for faith. Easier said than done, right? When you look at a sanctuary that's not as full as we'd like. But you know what I see? Every week, I see faces of people I haven't seen since before the pandemic. Every week, I see new faces coming back for the first time. Every week, I continue to see people online who are not ready to come back yet, but are still faithfully participating. Every week, I see new folks step forward and say, we will be a part of the work doing. By the way, we could use some people stepping forward on Wednesday nights. Leslie Spitzer, Sharon Hertzler, Rick Van Ryan have done a great job with our children's ministry on Wednesday night, but they could use some help. They could use some additions up there on the second floor. We need to understand that faith takes you forward. Fear leaves you stranded. Read with me what Nehemiah says. He gets one moment while they're afraid. They're all murmuring around. The whole crowd is about to walk off the job, and Nehemiah stands in front of them. Verses 13 through 15, this is incredible. Nehemiah says, therefore I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall, the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Nehemiah answered their concerns because they were concerned about security and concerned about how these folks might come and attack them. So Nehemiah finds some ways to plug the holes, and he says, all right, don't quit. Remember your God, who is great and awesome, and don't quit. Pick up the shovel again, pick up the pickaxe, and let's move forward and let's finish this mission that God has given us. Because, friends, God, we are no longer responsible for the mission that God gave people 10 and 20 years ago. We are responsible for what God has given us now. And we take our heritage, we take our past, and we funnel that into today because we look at the past of our church and we remember God's faithfulness to us. We remember of the things that God has done for us. And now we say that same God is going to act now. If we put our focus on remembering our God who is great and awesome and letting him lead us forward. Friends, don't quit. Remember that the God who has called us forward is bigger than what threatens us. Remember, yes, there are challenges, but our God is bigger. Remember, there is opposition, but our God is bigger. Remember that we will face discouragement, but our God is bigger. Remember your God, who is great and awesome, and fight for the spiritual renewal and health of your soul, your families, and your church and your community. Remember your God, who is great and awesome. Because it's time to fight. It's time to fight to see this city know how much Jesus loves them. All of them. It's time to stand up and not quit. I can't find any citations for this story. It's just in my memory. I was a child and listening to my pastor preach. Don't ever say that children aren't listening when preachers are preaching. They pick things up. I remember my pastor was preaching a sermon, and he concluded the sermon with this story. It's a story of a world-famous pianist who was giving a concert, and the hall was full, something like Ferguson Center, and it was full, and everybody's ready. The Steinway Grand was out on the stage ready. And a young boy, maybe 7 or 8 years old, who had just started taking piano lessons but was enamored with the instrument, got away from his mother. His mother was talking, and somehow he wandered up on the stage. And before you know it, right before this concert was about to take place, all of a sudden, the crowd is silenced to the riveting sounds of chopsticks. And immediately, everyone's head turns around. This is one of those black tie affairs, friends. Immediately, heads snap around, and you hear what you hear so often in these moments. Where's that boy's mother? What on earth is going on? What a tragedy. Can't somebody stop this? How many times have we heard those things, or maybe even said, embarrassingly said things like that? The maestro was right backstage about to come on, and he heard all that was going on. And slowly, without fanfare, he walked over to the piano. This boy is still playing chopsticks and reaches his arms around the little boy. The little boy starts for a second, and he looks up, and the man just says, "Keep going. Don't quit." And so the boy keeps playing chopsticks, and this piano master crafts on the spot a melody unlike anything anyone had ever heard, and played around the chopsticks of this boy. And they played together for 3 or 4 minutes and finished with a flourish, and the crowd stood up, applauded, and roared. The whole time, the pianist simply said in the boy's ear, "Don't quit. Don't quit." Friends, I don't care if the only thing you can do right now for God is play chopsticks. Don't quit. Because God has a way of making chopsticks beautiful. Don't quit. We're going to have some time of response. And I would like to ask you, as Beth plays, to simply pray. If you'd like to come and pray with Pastor Walter or myself, we'll be at the back of the sanctuary. If you'd like to come and talk to us about what it means to be a member of this family of God that simply is not going to quit loving this community, not going to quit loving this neighborhood, this city, we'd love to talk to you about that. But I invite you to use this time to ask God to help you put down fear, to ask God to renew you in your exhaustion, to ask God to help you with your negativity as I